Oh, the CEO, yes. Morning to you and your entourage. Today we are continuing the meeting that we had yesterday. We already had inputs of the third and the fourth quarter from the DG, on behalf of the department and CCMA, compensation fund and SEE. Today we will be having unemployment insurance fund. They are the first ones on our agenda. And productivity essay and NEDLAC. That's how our agenda goes, members. Anything on the agenda? Honorable Bahrain is moving for adoption. And then Honorable Fanskalvik and Loliwe, yes, are seconding it. So the agenda then, we'll continue with the agenda as it is. Over to you, Acting DG.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning. First, allow me to apologize for the Director General. He is appearing before SCOPA this morning, and he's requested me to stand in for him. If you will allow me, Chairperson, I think we have some new faces around the table this morning, if I can just introduce them so that members can know. I have here present with me today the Unemployment Insurance Commissioner, Mr. Teboho Maripeng. I also have the CEO of NEDLAC, Mr. Madora Vilakazi, directly next to me. I have the DDG for LP and IR, Mr. Seafield. I think we were here yesterday, as well as the DDG Public Employment Services, Mr. Samora Toba. I have Mr. Beki Maduna, who is the CFO of the Department of Labor, present here. Also the CFO for the UIF, Ms. Fizeka Pozi, is present here today. Mr. Vuledzani Mulindi, the Director for Internal Audit of the UIF, is somewhere down there. Mr. Mutiba, who is the CEO of Productivity South Africa, is sitting closer by. Ms. Judith Kumbi, who is the Acting Chief Director for Operations at the UIF. Mr. Sibusiso Sabelo, who is the CFO for Productivity South Africa. And then Mr. Gregory Schneeman, who is the Chief of Staff. If I've not introduced another member of the department's team, I apologize up front for that.
Thank you, Acting DG. And the two gentlemen at the corner, are they part of your delegation? Can you introduce yourselves, sir? Use the mic.
Indoni briefing the report or what?
My report.
Sure.
What are you talking about?
Sure.
Hey, serious. I was a 30 person. You know,
you serious?
Yeah.
But the post has been
made. I come to them.
I think then we can continue. There's nothing wrong. There is no threat. It's the usual. They are also deployed because they are also staff of parliament. I think the only thing is that I have not seen those faces before. Would I have known, I was not going to ask them. They will come back because they are going to other committees as well. So there's nothing wrong at all. So we can continue with the business of the day.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Before the Commissioner starts with his presentation, I just want to confirm with you that we continue in the same way as yesterday, that we focus on the areas of non-achievement. Thank you. Then I'm giving the microphone to the Commissioner for his presentation. Quarter 3 and 4, please.
Just to do the same as yesterday, I still can't see the slide numbers. So we can just, the Commissioner can refer to the pages. I don't know if he's got the printout in front of him as well. It might be useful because otherwise we get lost.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll shoot straight to, I think the rest of the pages are up to slide 8. This is just background on what UIF is about. And then when we get to slide 9, is a focus on quarter 3. Are we comfortable on the slide numbers? Can I continue? Okay. Yes. On slide 10, then it reflects our performance on quarter 3. As UIF, we've performed at 67% for quarter 3. I'll just focus on the areas that we've missed in particular. Moving to the next slide, The first one that we've missed is the percentage return on investment. What I want to highlight to the committee is we achieved a return on investment, but not at the percentage that we had anticipated. The main reason being the performance in the market in general, that we invested in the JSE and other markets that were not really performing at the point in time, and hence we missed the target. If you move to the next page, on the next one that we've missed is the turnaround time. 90% of claims paid within 90% of claims paid within 5 weeks. This target we've marginally missed it by 1%. The target is 90%. We only achieved 89%. We've also put here some interventions to close the gaps on how we quickly can drive the targets. But the volumes that we picked up during the course of the year had increased, and we haven't aligned that with the capacity. But we've also, as a department, approved 258 UIF CSOs that will close the gaps on capacity. We've also are reviewing the entire labor center model to close the gaps. We've started also the procurement of switches to deal with network issues across all the labor centers. Then I'll move on to slide number 17. Slide number 17 refers to increasing the employers using e-filing. For this quarter in particular, we also marginally missed the target. Most of the employers still insist on using manual methods of declaring with UIF, of declaring their employees and paying for their contributions. But what we've picked up as an organization is that the system can be more user-friendly and much simpler to be used. To an extent that we are moving now to review and modernize our e-filing platform to make it easier and also to be easier to be used on smartphones. We are far ahead with the project. We are hoping around September we'd go live with a new solution. The next slide, number 18, speaks to percentage of budget transferred to turnaround solutions for Productivity SA to effect turnaround solutions to companies in distress. Here, in our discussion with the CEO, he picked up some irregularities that he was not comfortable with at Productivity SA, and the two parties agreed that there's a need to effect an investigation, just to look at what exactly if these irregularities are in fact existing, or if there's maybe other possibilities. And the investigation was effected to an extent that the two parties also agreed that we'll transfer a tranche of funds to Productivity SA to the tune of 24 million to allow them to work. And I think here, the main reason is that investigation that the two parties agreed on to actually effect. I think that's the last one for quarter three. Can I continue to quarter four, Chair?
Yes, please.
Okay. Now with quarter four, I'm going to skip slides until slide number 28. Slide 28, that refers to 1st April 2016 to 31st March 2017. Yes. Now, on this slide, our performance as it compared to quarter 3 has dropped by 17% to 15%. I'm going to highlight some of the key issues that has resulted in this drop in target. The first one is that of the percentage of cost. Next slide, Judith, slide 13. The first one being the percentage return on investment, we continued again also to lose in that one because the market conditions hasn't changed. They've remained unfavorable for investment. Even though we have received 5.9% return on investment, we haven't achieved our desired 8.6% return on investment. And here we've reviewed our investment mandate and also aligned with the financial conditions. Our new target is now sitting at CPI instead of CPI plus 2.5%. And the next one that we've missed is on slide 31, which is the percentage of valid claims with complete information approved within 5 weeks. Again, we've remained stable here at 89%, as in the previous quarter. And the interventions here, again, we are now moving with the implementation of the CSOs. We are hoping within the next 2 months or so, we'll be able to have the CSOs deployed to different provinces to enable the provinces to process quicker the claims that are coming through. The process of reviewing the labor center model has started. The acting chief director of operations is also busy with provincial offices to look at all the possible loopholes that are causing bottlenecks in the process to close these gaps, so that at least around quarter two we can start the implementation of the solution that they may have found with the team. The next one that we've missed is also now percentage increase in revenue. In quarter three, we had achieved this target, but the global picture for quarter four, we've also marginally missed the target. And once again, this is driven by the conditions in the market, because the more people you have that are contributing towards URF, the more revenue the organization has. And the lesser people are contributing, the lesser the revenue we have. And once again here, our target was 7.6. We achieved a 6.6 in terms of percentage increase in revenue. Once again, marginally below by 0.9%, driven by the market. We've reviewed it down after having actuaries advising us that given the market conditions now, the most possible target to be achieved is around 7.2%. The next one that we've missed is the percentage of overpayment balance collected. Now, you see again, our targets are marginally missed on page 35. Target is 20%, we've achieved a 19.6. Mathematically, you would round it off to 20%. But we've decided that 19.6 missed, we are comfortable because we haven't achieved the target. Once again, this is one of the targets driven by the market. The people that are owing us as UIF, when the market is pressured, they also get pressure that they're unable to pay back the funds. And some of the funds, we ended up writing them off due to the nature of the people that you are collecting from. But here we are going to be driving the compliance strategy to ensure that companies comply with the UIF Administration Act. I think the next one is on percentage of funds transferred to turnaround solutions. The rationale remains that one that I presented earlier about the discussion between the two parties to look at the irregularities that Mr. Mutiba had picked up and the agreement between parties that let's look at what are these possibilities and what could have happened. And I think in the new financial year, we anticipate that this target will be met as we transfer funds temporarily to the Productivity SA. And the last one is the turnaround time to transfer funds to the CETAs. The main reason for non-achievement here with this target is how the indicators and the technical indicator descriptors were coined. It created a problem when we brought in the auditors to review. And I have Mr. Mlindi here, our internal auditor, because we also asked him to review our quarter four and also confirm if our targets as an internal auditor, do they meet the requirements that an internal auditor would have checked. And some of the targets, we've removed them from achieved as per advice that we received from internal audit, that we need to go back and clean up some of these targets so that they are aligned correctly. I'll stop at that, Chair, and open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, there are two presentations from the Commissioner, quarter three, quarter four. Can we engage on that? Honorable Loliwe?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let me welcome the report. Having done that, I want to go to quarter four, slide 28, there on poverty alleviation schemes. We have achieved 33%. What is the challenge? Because we want to eradicate poverty. Why are you so underperforming there? Then in terms of program two, I see that Northern Cape, which was a worst performer in yesterday's presentation, is now performing just like all other provinces, managing to get something like 91% in terms of performance. What is it that you are doing which you are not sharing with other sections? What is your secret which makes you win Northern Cape? Because we were told yesterday that in Northern Cape, they have a challenge of new staff. What is the case in UIF?
Thanks, Chair. Honorable, background, and then after that, Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to let you know, yesterday we heard from the department on the passing of Mr. Bernico. We still don't know when the funeral is going to be, and maybe if they could let us know as soon as possible. And also to point out that there's a photograph of Mr. Bernico on the front page of the Cape Argus today showing what he had done for the public. So I just thought I'd point it out to you if anyone's interested in the department. Thank you, sir, for the presentation. And it looks like it is starting to improve. Thank you very much. I have a few issues that I just wanted to put on the table, and maybe you want to comment on them. The public are still experiencing enormous problems. We're still seeing that, and the public are coming into your offices all around the country. In particular, I'm just talking from my own experience here in the Cape and in the Eastern Cape. I don't really know much about the rest of the country, but we're still getting ongoing complaints about these long queues, people being sent away, files going missing. A lot of it is done on paperwork as opposed to computer. And officials not coming back to them. We've also had many complaints about officials being rude to the public. I think people are a little bit overworked, maybe. Just on that score, and maybe you want to comment on it. And it touches on a lot of your objectives, and also a lot of your maybe one or two places where you're not hitting the targets. The next issue is obviously the backlog. There is an enormous backlog from before you were appointed commissioner, and it might, I don't know, how are we going to actually tackle that backlog and get, because you're never going to be able to go forward properly until you've actually tackled the backlog, and maybe you want to tell us what you've done. And like I said yesterday to one or two of the other departments within the department, is you set these targets yourselves, but it doesn't help us in terms of how you're going to tackle that backlog itself. The other issue is, and I've been speaking to you about that, sir, and I appreciate you wanting to help with this, is the education of the public. How do you actually claim? How do businesses register? That sort of education, and I know that you're going to be appearing on the radio in a few weeks' time, but that's the sort of thing that it's the public who just don't know what to do. Many people get their UI19 form and then they're not sure what to do with it. And in fact, many of the employers are completely at fault because they don't, first of all, many employers don't register. I don't know how you're going to get to that. Second of all, when someone leaves their employer, either been retrenched, because we're going through mass retrenchments now in the country, or retirement or something of that nature, they're just given a form and shoved out. The employer doesn't tell them what to do. And a lot of people pitch up sort of a year later saying, I still haven't got my insurance money. And they didn't know that they had to actually go in and claim. So we've got to get out to the public somehow. I know that our offices get calls daily where people haven't claimed for months, and then the department says, well, you're too late. And it's a real problem. And these people are unable to find other jobs. And here we've got insurance, but they just don't ever claim. So that's the other issue. I'm going to refer also to page 9. I think it's slide 17. Like I said, I can't see the actual number on the slide, but page 9 of our printout, where you're talking about the U-filing systems, which you didn't achieve. As you know, Commissioner, I've recently tried to help out a member of the public with this U-filing system. A lady did help me there eventually. I can't remember who it was. Some lady. I can't remember her name. I struggled. I'm not the most intelligent, and I'm not the most computer literate, but I really struggled with your U-filing system. And I can imagine someone who might have less education than me trying to go through it. I had to pull in my kids to help me because they're computer experts. And I had to pull them in to help this member of the public try and do the e-filing system. It was almost impossible for me. So if I'm having difficulty, I can assure you there must be others out there that are having difficulty as well. I'm not sure if any of you have actually tried. Maybe you pretend that you can claim and then try and get onto it yourself and go for it. And it's a real problem. Then have a look at slide 18. I do want to applaud you in that you approached Productivity South Africa. Well done on that, because they've got the skills to have a look at this and to help you. So I want to applaud you and say well done, and at least we're helping each other within the department, and I'm sure they'll get to the bottom of what's happening. But there is something that's a bit disconcerting, because you said financial irregularities. Does that mean fraud? What is that all about? What is financial irregularities? It makes us a bit nervous when we read that. If you call it financial constraints, maybe, but irregularities is a little bit nerve-wracking for us to have a look at, because then we want to know who's been grossly negligent or who's been thieving or something of that nature. There was something else I wanted to look at, and I apologize, Madam Chair. Here it is. Page 19, I think it's the second slide on that page. 19 times 2, anyway. It's a turnaround time to transfer funds to a CETA after the approval of a training layoff scheme application. Can you unpack that a little bit more for us and tell us what that is all about? I just somehow didn't understand it. And then finally, you're talking about investment and you didn't get the right returns. My understanding was most of the money was invested with the Public Investment Corporation. That was my understanding with the answer that the Minister of Labour gave to Parliament. And then you don't have control of it at all. It's the PIC that has control. So I'm not sure whether you invest certain monies yourself and how that's done. Maybe you can explain. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Honourable Pocklin. Honourable Van Skalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by the previous speakers. Mine is just also on the irregularities, financial irregularities. You've indicated that there's currently investigation. Can you give us an update on how far the investigation is? And also in terms of the service provider that you've mentioned previously in terms of the upgrade of your data center. So can we get an update on that also? Has the service provider been appointed as promised by the UIF in previous engagements? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable America. Thank you, Honourable Fanskabe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Maripeng, thank you for the presentation. My question would be, is that it's well and good to have achieved certain turnaround times in terms of processing of claims. But I think we need to reflect on the lived experiences of the user of your services. And if you go to labor centers, you will see long queues. The labor centers, I know it is not within your powers to really impact upon that. Many of our labor centers are understaffed, and I have visited, you know, here within the Cape Peninsula, a few labor centers, and our consumers of services are irate in terms of the type of services that they get from the labor center insofar as the processing of the UIF claims. So I'm excited, I'm hopeful that you have stated that you're looking at the process of redesigning the labor centers insofar as how it could assist our people in terms of processing their claims. And could you provide us some sort of little sort of clarity in terms of what we have in mind, in terms, because you need the cooperation of the Department of Labor, because it is within their sort of control. And then secondly, we do not have any financial reporting, because we know that you have huge financial assets within your portfolio. We need to have a look at and have some sort of insight in terms of the liquidity and in terms of the financial sort of health of the your portfolio, at least, you know, once a quarter, at least once every second quarter. But we have not had that in a long time, and I think that we need some sort of insight. And lastly, brother, if you can remember, in terms of when you presented your annual plans at earlier this year, I did say that you are rather ambitious in terms of your investment returns, as far as your investment are concerned, vis-a-vis the compensation fund, and I'm happy to hear that you have considered that, because the market is very depressed at this stage, and you will continue to not achieve your target with that ambitious sort of return on investment that you have set for yourself. I hope you achieve it, but certainly it's very unlikely. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. Let me start with Honourable Teko.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning. The entity last we met with you, and there is this progress of upgrading for data. How far are you for the upgrade? I don't know whether it's appointment, and take us through and update us on how far are you on the service, data service upgrade, the data, data centers, yes.
Thanks,
Chair. Chair, I just wanted to check with my learned friend, Honorable Bagram, how does he feel today? Yesterday he was embarrassed. The majority party is here now, and the opposition is still not here, but can he inform us how does he feel today?
Madam Chair, first of all, now I feel intimidated. So if I could sort that one out. And I thought that's why the security was here. Thank you.
Okay, now that's fair. And at DG, over to you. Answering of questions.
Thank you, Chair. Most of the questions asked, in more ways than one, I justify it, and I think that you are looking into. Let me start with the kind of difficult one. I've got the Demo Tiba here just to assist me. Now, with the financial irregularity, it's more of what Mr. Mtiba picked up. And for a lack of better word, we use financial irregularity, because there are some of the finances that we are not so comfortable with in terms of how they were panning out in his eyes. And as a result, he said, let's look at this thing and see what exactly is it. But at that point in time, we coined it as financial irregularity. But I think he can add. In terms of investigation, we had our first report presented to us on Monday, the MTW. Yes. The first report was presented to us on Monday. And we've looked at the report, and we've given the investigators some of our comments. So we're expecting them to give us the final report at least within the next week or so, to close that picture. Madam Chief, I don't know if you want to add anything on the investigation.
Chairperson and committee members,
When we started the 2016-17 financial year, we had received money in the 15-16 financial year from the UIF. And then we were worried that this program has been in place since 2012. And when we tracked performance, we could pick up that the money spent was not equivalent to the outcomes. And now, if you look at this program, in essence, it's about workers who are to lose jobs. Now, if funds are dispensed and they are not used for that purpose, you sit with a problem. Because at one level, you look at the number of companies that you should assist so that their fortunes improve, to retain jobs, and also to where they are improving, to re-employ. Now, the entity had earlier on commissioned an investigation just to try and pick up exactly what happened, but I think it was limited because we didn't have financial resources. But what we could pick up was there was maladministration around the program. And then secondly, there are funds that could not be accounted for. So out of that, then I approached the Director General to say, let's just do a broader investigation so that, one, I can be able to pick up whether this maladministration, is it systematic? Is it because we don't have capacity? Is it because there was negligence and so on? That's one part of it. And then you have an amount of money that is just not accounted for. At that point, it was about 36 million. And now, as I was taking over this entity, I got worried that I'm actually taking over something that is either drowning. And to the extent that any funding that is not accounted for, if UIF one day says to productivity, I say, pay back that money, we'll close shop because we rely on this funding. So, and it's for that reason that we requested this investigation. I think at the right time we'll be able to give a definitive answer on the outcome of the investigation. Thank you.
And just on that response, the people who are being investigated, are they suspended? Because I would think that there are people who are suspects. Where are they now?
One was went through the disciplinary process and dismissed. The CFO, because we picked up that there were just issues that had to do with the CFO. When we took him through the disciplinary process, he resigned. The executive manager for the program, more especially on issues of maladministration, also, before we could start with the disciplinary process, she also resigned. But then I think what is important is where there is fraud, if it does happen that we pick fraud, they are not off the hook. And this investigation that is broader, where we ask the DG to do, it's exactly to get to that root cause. So that anybody who thought I would leave whilst there is some element of fraud, and in some instances we're suspecting collusion with the service providers. So that has been picked up and we'll follow up on that.
Chairperson, if I may add, we had the draft report, as the commissioner has said on Monday, but in that report we have also requested the scope of the investigation to be broadened because of the matters that we found in the draft report. So we'll get the report on the first part of the investigation within a week, but the extension of the scope, particularly around what Mr. Mutiba is talking about, fraud, collusion and so forth, we'll get that as that forms part of the in-depth analysis of or investigation of what has happened at the fund. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll move swiftly then to the next item. Let me start with you filing. Honorable Buckley, you are quite correct. We've also picked up that the platform is not user-friendly, it's not simple. it has an element of complication. And that's why we started the process of modernizing the platform. So it can also be smartphone friendly, that you can even use it on your phone. We have started that process. We are hoping around September, Judith, that we should be able to go live, so that this, the public can use a much more simpler platform. But also, what we are hoping to do as part of us improving service delivery is to have free Wi-Fi in labor centers. Now, when you have free Wi-Fi at labor centers and you have a much more simplified e-filing platform, it means people could be on the queues, but they can easily just use their phones to apply for different services that you're offering at the labor centers. And it therefore reduces the amount of time people spending on the queue, or they could be on the queues but just using their smartphones to access the service that you're offering. It's part of the improvement that we're bringing. And the process of the free Wi-Fi has already started. The tender is closing on the 5th of July. So it's gone out, 5th of July is closing, and we should start the process of evaluation and maybe appointing a service provider. It's part of us improving services, that at least when people are standing in queues, they are able to access our services. And with respect to financial reporting, we do acknowledge that, yes, and I think we'll be guided by the committee at what point we can report on the financials, but we are more than ready to bring reports as and when required. But just to confirm, when we are bringing the end report, we'll also bring to the committee how our financial health is at this point in time. There was a question around the queue management and service delivery at labor centers, capacity constraints. We've also picked up that problem across, especially in our visit with the DG, we picked up the problems. We've also sent out the acting chief director operations in different provinces. We sent out the director ICT to check what ICT issues we can improve, and that's what led to the possibility of us bringing free Wi-Fi. The chief director of corporate services also went to Northwest. They spent about 4 days just to confirm and look at how the processes are running. And part of their finding was how the process is structured is not favorable to the public. And they've come with recommendations. But what we are trying to do now is just to concretize so that there's consistency. We'll be visiting maybe 2 or 3 more provinces just to confirm their findings. And then we'll move swiftly to implementation. And hence the view that I presented earlier, that we are reviewing the actual model of the labor center. And the good thing is we've come to an agreement with the DG and members of DOL-EXCO that we can have UIF CSOs or UIF functionaries at labor centers. So we can segregate the functions at labor center and capacitate people at labor center such that at least UIF can bring more capacity at the labor center. And that's how the 258 CSOs have started. It's part of that program to bring more people. The question around education of the public, we picked that ourselves as well, that in terms of how well public know is limited. I mean, I was on radio about 2 weeks ago when I was talking about the death benefit. Even the radio presenter was quite shocked that, oh, there's a death benefit too. To this extent, we have a clearly defined schedule now of engagement. I think for the past 4 weeks, I've been on radio, Judith has been on radio, we have more people coming on radio just to clarify some of these concepts. We've also published some of our requirements for different services that we're offering on media. We'll be going as well to the local media as well to talk to them about the services that we're providing. So it's an aggressive campaign to educate the public about what UIF is offering. We are even putting together a booklet of some sort, a base, that will also assist just to clarify some of these issues for the public to learn more. So we've picked this up as well, and we are quite hopeful that even the committee has also seen it. Where's the other one? I think the investments, it's true. Our investment has been sent to PIC to run with. As UIF, we thought it's best as well, not just to leave the investment with PIC to manage, but also to have a certain target that we drive with them, that you say, we've given you funds to invest, but this is our expectation. And part of that is also to push them consistently to say, are you reaching this target? Or you're just doing as you please. So it's part of us managing how they deal with our investment portfolio. But granted, we need to think about how the market is behaving and how we can align our target. And hence we took the advice from the previous sitting that we need to revise our target down. And we brought it to CPI at this stage, and we'll see how that pans out. And it's at one by one. Labor activation. The target that is missed with labor activation is the one on the smartness of the target. It's not so much that we didn't pay on time. We paid on time, but the link between the target and the technical indicator, there was a bit of a flaw that was picked up by our internal audit, and we took the advice that let's not register this as achieved, because it will reflect badly that you cannot marry, and therefore it will affect the performance information. So we pull it back and say it's not achieved. We are comfortable. But we are aggressively driving labor activation to an extent that we are reviewing now the strategy of labor activation and what labor activation actually should do. This Thursday and Friday, we are having a strategy workshop to finalize the labor activation strategy so that it can take a different phase and start impacting the public and move away from what it was before. It was initially a pilot. Now we need to start moving and have a much more massive and bigger impact to the public, given the conditions currently in the market. Northern Cape, Judith. Northern Cape, in the main, is driven by volumes. The volumes in the Northern Cape are much smaller compared to other provinces. It makes it easier for them to achieve the targets. I think that's what I can think of right now. I don't know, Judith, if you have any addition there.
Excuse me. I'm a teacher. Yeah, if I can help the commissioner there as well. The workforce in the labor, in particularly UIF, in the Northern Cape Provincial Office, is very stable. So they have well-experienced officials working there. Unlike the compensation commissioner yesterday told us that he was staffing, he had to train and so on. So the people there, I don't want to say they can process claims with closed eyes, but I think the assistant director in that particular office has been there more than 20 years, so it gives you an indication of the stability of the UIF staff component, and that assists them in dealing with these claims at a much speedier rate than when you have new people who are still uncertain. And I think the work of the compensation fund, given what they work with, is a bit more complicated because of the medical issues and so forth than that in UIF. Thank you.
I think there's a final.
I think it's a good thing to hear. So in that office, how many people have been there for quite some time? The other one is more than 20, and then the rest?
Chairperson, you're asking me offhand, which I can't give you detail in terms of each and every one. But if I think back to the time that I was acting in the Northern Cape, the numbers of new appointments in that section, I cannot recall one. The people there have been there for quite some time. I think the deputy director in heading the unit has been there more than 5-6 years. So that gives you the sense of the stability. And then the lower level functionaries, the people who must process the claims, they have really been there for years and years and years. But I can't give you, we can give you the detail if you should request. But it's really a unit that is very stable in that provincial office.
There's a challenge. It's a strength now, but it's a challenge. That's why I wanted numbers. Now that I think you understand what I'm saying, so the sooner you deal with that, you deploy other people or other people must understand what is being done in the office. Otherwise, when they decide to close that office down, it will be closed one day. Thank you.
Okay, I think the difficult one, the data center. I think that's a kind of difficult one, I must admit up front. The process started with the data center. We'd already have reached an agreement with CETA on how we are going to approach the issue of the data center. We are almost at the point of implementation. When we picked up that the costs were much higher than we had anticipated. and the department took it is that maybe we need to restart the process and go out into the market and look for a much more cheaper option that is more affordable. And hence also considering other options in the meantime, like your network upgrade and free Wi-Fi is part of us trying to close the gaps whilst we're going, whilst we're testing the market for a better solution. Much, I don't know if there's anything else on to add.
Honorable Teko.
Thanks, Commissioner. Can we just fix that one of saying last you said June on the issue of UIF filing method, and now you're saying September. So I'm afraid you just keep on postponing the dates. Or can you safely say we don't estimate dates so that when you come back, we don't ask you why you said June, now September, now April. So we just have to say it's an ongoing program where we'll come and give you a report, because once you start mentioning this, then I'll come and ask you what happened.
Thank you. Honorable Bertram.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just arising out of some of the answers, I have some further questions arising out of those answers, if I may. Obviously, times and dates are of vitally important for us as a committee. You've raised certain issues that you are working on and you're going to get results. For instance, you're modernizing the e-filing platform, you're putting in free Wi-Fi, you're going to get better financial reporting, you've picked up problems with the queues and the waiting and the model of the labor center, you're introducing functionaries at the labor centers. All those issues that I've just read out to you are fantastic and well done, but we as a committee would like to know when you're targeting, because that's what this is all about. This meeting today is, you know, where are you and what you're looking for in the future. So maybe you can put some dates on it. I mean, we're not going to hold you to it radically, but if you tell us it will be finished by June next year and we come here in June next year and you say, well, we're working on getting the queues sorted out, and that's not going to be good enough. So we'd like to know if you could put some, maybe not right now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you could report back to our chair as to where you would like to see yourselves in a period of time. One thing that I must tell you has shocked me a bit is, almost as an aside, you mentioned the problem with regard to the investigation about this financial irregularities. It was almost hidden in your report. And I thought, in fact, you'd made a mistake and you used the wrong word. But now what we hear is this is a massive issue. And I applaud the financial team for now taking this up, immediately identifying it and taking it up with both hands. And I do applaud them, but please, you know, we're all on the same side. You don't have to hide anything from us. If there is an irregularity of that nature, this is the one area where you should be coming back, if not to the whole committee, if you feel a bit nervous, but at least to our chair, to say this is a real issue in this in the department, and we're now investigating. Because now what we've heard is that one's dismissed, two have resigned in order to avoid the disciplinary inquiry. There appears to be possibly fraud. There appears to be collusion with service providers. And you've, in fact, the acting DG has, in fact, asked for the scope to be broadened, which makes us very nervous, because this is the sort of thing that can really throw you out completely. We don't even know the scope. I mean, we hear a figure of 26 million, but now that we're asking it to be broadened, might be a hell of a lot more than 26 million. You could add maybe a naught to that. We don't want to go down the same road as SAA or ESCOM or those institutions. We're very proud of the Department of Labor, so I'm pleased that you've picked it up and you're trying to get it clean, but you don't need to hide it from us in any way. What I would like to ask, though, is when do you suspect the report will be ready, and I presume we'll get a copy of this report, And you would then pass it on to Zulani, who would then distribute it to us before, in fact, the Sunday Times get it, because that's where we normally find these things out. When it, with regard to...
Sunday Times, Yan?
Yeah,
okay.
They find these things out, and then we read about it on a Sunday, and it's my department. I'm working with the Department of Labor, and then I read, like we read about the fraud at in the department, in other departments, not yours. But we read about it in the Sunday Times, we don't hear about it here. And like the 35 people we heard about yesterday that were all suspended, we didn't hear about it in this committee. But we read about it in the newspapers. That actually was read about in the Mail and Guardian. So please, we're supposed to be friendly, and we're trying to help the situation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Loliwa? Noted.
Chair, in support of what Honorable Bikram has said, to say we appreciate that they indicated themselves without us having to pick it up ourselves, that there are fraudulent transactions that are happening. We really appreciate that. But what I wanted to urge us all to do is let us allow them space to do the legal part of it, so that when time is proper, they come back to report without us interfering in the processes that they are doing. Because should they report every step of the way, in one way or another, we may jeopardize their case. But when that thing is at a stage of reporting, we want a full report on the matter. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Loliwe and Bikram, I just want to also add to say, as much as it is public, as much as we have interest, I think you should continue with your investigation quietly, without us asking you questions, phoning you and ask you questions. Any member of parliament will be asking you that question in relation to that. You are not obliged to answer those questions because you are still with the investigation. So continue your way in that manner. You have a right, even in the press. I mean, of course, whatever we say here in the committee, it's something that is public. But you have a right not to comment or to comment on the issues that are not yet completed, that are still in progress. And he mentioned the Sunday Times. They have don't be intimidated by false or reporting of what you said and jump into wanting to respond to the distortion. You'll be getting into the trap. Let them distort you until when you are ready to take the report out. Your paparazzi is here, by the way. I'm sure we'll be able to deal with the press very much so in this regard. Thank you. Questions? Are we done with the questions?
No, Madam Chair, you have forgotten about me.
Sorry, my apologies.
I think that I just want to add where my previous colleagues have stated. I think what we need to understand, Mr. Malapeng, the reason why we sort of discuss this matter is because a particular outcome you have not achieved. You stated in terms of your targets that a certain percentage of funds should be transferred to productivity. You have not done that on the basis of this meritorium, has highlighted this. So it is not a UIF irregularity that occurred. It is, to all credit to Productivity South Africa, you know, it's reflective management that has taken place, because as Ms. Simara Tubi has stated, that trends over a period of time have been observed. And because of non-achievement of certain targets, further probing sort of took place, and I think that you should be applauded for that. And I think that what we need to ask is that where was the Auditor General? I mean, if perceived, perceived unproven irregularities have occurred over a long time and haven't picked it up. So once your investigation has been concluded, the Sunday Times will certainly not hear it from us, is that we need to, get the Auditor General in here and, interrogate them as to, what have they done in terms of possible outcomes. But once again, you should be congratulated. And I think that, as the chairperson has stated, the necessary space should be granted to both entities to get to the bottom of this and sort it out. Thank you.
There are no further questions for the compensation fund. Thank you for the information and thank you for the good work. There will always be challenges, but we see the route that we are taking that is going towards the direction of really discharging services to the people. We will be listening to Productivity South Africa.
Thank you, Chairperson and committee members. Maybe just to pick up on the last issue that was raised about the AG. That's the reason we haven't had, we're not audited per se by the AG, but we haven't appointed external auditors. Now, it is precisely the reason why the scope has been extended. Because the question is indeed, if we had governance structures that were supposed to pick this thing and it was not picked over a period of time, what went wrong? So I think that investigation will help us to arrive there. To the extent that I think if we looked at how we're going to present to you and said we would give you a high-level type of summary in terms of performance for quarter 3 and 4, and then we would also give a reflection on the finances and also a reflection on the audit action plan and how far have we gone in trying to resolve those things. And I would like to request that we go to slide number 8. That slide gives us a depiction of performance of Productivity SA in the third and the fourth quarter. If you look at the first strategic objective, those are two in terms of performance, 0 and 0. Is precisely that when we started the year in terms of the annual performance plan, our targets were informed by the fact that we will receive 97 million rand from the UIF, but because of the challenges that we had during the course of the financial year, we only received 24 million. However, we did not then revise the annual performance plan targets in the middle of the financial year. But to give the committee comfort, of the 24 million that we received in the financial year, which we received in July, that is almost the third quarter, we then decided it is better to begin to ask ourselves, what will 24 million do in terms of that strategic objective? And then in terms of evaluation, it could give us 33 companies, which we would then intervene in. And I can safely say that for that quarter 3 and 4, having those two 33 companies to intervene in, we then were able to assist 49 companies. So in a way, because we also wanted to test the capacity of the system to deliver. That if we got the 97 million, how far would we go? With the 24 million, how far could we go? So I think I'm comfortable that the system is ready to can service those enterprises that are facing economic distress and also to save jobs. And we will give the detail in the entire presentation. The other area that is, it's not the committee would see in terms of the second strategic objective. Just if you go to the second last column, you have 20 there and 40. I have to indicate here it was an issue of planning, where we planned targets and then those targets were actually achieved and exceeded in quarter one and two. And then you sit with a challenge that now you've got resources, what do you do with them? So that's where in almost all the programs, because of that money that we received from UIF in the third quarter, we then diverted resources into that area so that we move and do something in that strategic objective. The other area that is a little bit of concern is in terms of strategic objective number four, where we moved from 67 to 50. Here it's more about your service companies relying on what you can access in the market, the companies that should join the workplace challenge program. So if the economy is going down, you find difficulty in attracting companies to participate in the program. So in overall, if I were to summarize my presentation, those are the challenges that we were sitting with. And then I would like to then take you pair on the slides per program, and I would like us to go to particularly around where we did not achieve the set targets. On slide 16, just one area where one was concerned, it's around the number of media articles in terms of quarter three of the marketing and communications program, that we were not able to issue out articles in that quarter. And the real challenge was that we were having challenges of funding, because we budget on the basis of also the funding that we receive from the UIF, because we have to market this program. So immediately that you, instead of getting 97 million, you get 24, you scale down. So that's just the main reason there. And then I would also like to take you to slide 18. This has to do also with the same challenge in terms of quarter four. Same challenge as per quarter three, that we could not achieve that target due to exactly the same reason. And if I take you to slide 20, quarter three of the productivity organizational solutions, you can see that in almost four of the areas that we had to perform in, none of the targets were met. And that's where I was saying, precisely because I think it was a problem of planning, that we had targets set and then we just achieved them all in quarter one and two. But the comfort I had is that this is what helped us to achieve those 49 companies in terms of the turnaround solution, because we then said, let's put up a sort of a war room whereby the turnaround solutions program, as well as the other program that we are having with Transnet, we should just channel our resources in that and make sure that we crack that and service the people that we... So I am not much concerned about this. We have achieved the targets for the year. However, we will, in terms of planning for 2017-18, we're able to look at this area and say, why do we have to achieve what we said for the year in two quarters? So that has been corrected. If I take you to the next slide, that would be talking to quarter four of the same program. The trend is the same in terms of quarter four in this program. And also just to indicate to the committee that because the turnaround solutions program executive manager left in quarter three, we then had the productivity organizational solutions executive manager taking over the responsibility for turnaround in the war room environment, so that we just crack our targets for the year. And we've seen positive outcomes. If I could take you to slide 22, that's a slide where we're talking about the turnaround solutions. I think the explanations have been given. Our performance is dismal here. If you look at the APP targets and compare them with our performance. But as I said, it was more, we had to look at what can we do with 24 million. So what you see on slide 22 as well as slide 23 in terms of that program, it's basically the same, that we could not perform in quarter three, we could not perform in quarter four, just because of those targets in as per the APP. But the story that we're giving there, it's actually an indication, more especially on slide 23, it's an indication of what is the actual. So in terms of actual, 24 against 33 companies, there was overperformance in the program. If I were to take you to slide 28, you'd see that there's no progress there. That is the deviance of 6. However, what happened in that program as well, if you go back to quarter one, which unfortunately I'm not able to give you now, but as I presented before, the targets were also in terms of that program achieved in quarter one. So the annual targets for this program have been achieved. And then on slide 30, if you look at the value chain competitiveness program, particularly the workplace challenge, that's where I said these are also drawn in terms of market conditions. However, if you look at that 46, it's just an indication of the fact that the target was achieved already in the previous quarters, and that gives us comfort that the annual targets have been met. I think, Chair, in terms of performance information, I would stop here and then request Babu Savela to take us through the financials as well as the audit outcomes.
What is variance? In a simple term. And what? Yeah. Just one word for me. Simple. Mm-hmm. if we look at this, the progress is 19. Eh? Let's look at this at the slides. That English is too big for me. I want you to tell me the targets. I want you to say this is what we have achieved, this is what we have not achieved in terms of numbers, and that's what I will understand. So where is it there? What is that you have achieved? What is that you have not achieved? For me to understand. I think all your slides are saying variance and reasons for variance. I don't see that. There's no problem. All I need is for me to understand, because if I don't understand you, I might end up saying yes where I'm supposed to be questioning, or say questioning where I'm supposed to be applauding you. Even on the slide, just say for me, this is where we failed. This is where we have done more. Any slide, you can pick up any slide.
I have slide 31. And that talks to quarter three. The target was 5. We achieved 3. In simple terms, we failed to achieve 2. That is the one that is in the bracket.
Okay, understand. Then someone else was going to be. Do you also, members? You also want clarity because they're not done yet. Yes, it's not yet question time. I just didn't want to be confused as we go forward. Thank you. Can you complete the presentation, please?
Thank you very much, Chairman, and good morning to the committee. Okay, basically, I'll just present the financial impact of what has been presented. On slide 36, which is the slide on the screen, basically this is our revenue structure. As we look at it, in line with Section 40 of Employment Services Act, we are basically funded 40A says by Parliament, and then 40B says by revenue from other services. From by grants from other services. So basically the money that comes from Parliament, if you look at the budget column, you have 47 million. The money we receive from UIF, the plan was 97 million. And then we have 8 million that comes from the DTI. Then income that we generate as Productivity SA, the plan was to achieve 37 million. If you look at those numbers, you add them up. So basically, Productivity SA is a company. 80% of its income is dependent on grants and Parliament. And a mere 20% basically comes from services that we render. Now, I would like to take the committee to the actual column. This is the performance basically for the year. We had planned to receive 47 from the Department of Labor, but eventually for the year we received 59 million. I do have an explanation on the comments column. We ran out of cash towards December to basically pay employees for January and February, for February and March. We then had to approach Department of Labor for additional grants. We were granted 11.1 million. Now, there is a variance. Again, a variance is what we could not achieve compared to what was planned. Of 80%, if you look at the UIF funding, the plan was to receive 97. We only received 19 million. The commissioner and the CE have expanded on the reasons behind the underpayment. Of saying only 25% of the original amount was received. the reasons have been explained. But here I'm just showing the impact. Given the fact that UIF constitute about 51% of our funding, so when they underfunded us, as it were, the impact of that is that we sit with a deficit or an underachievement in income of 49%. If you look at the total revenue, we only achieve 96 against a plan of 191 million. So the major impact basically was the fact that 80% of our revenue was not received from the UIF. I would like to take the comment to the next slide. The next slide basically at the bottom adds the expenditure. The top section is exactly the same as the previous slide. Safe to say, I've now added a column that reflects the audited outcomes for the previous year, which is 2015-2016. In terms of our expenditure, the bottom line for the financial year 2016-2017 is a loss of 11.9 million. The reason for the loss, we had about 12.7 million, a figure not reflected on the line, but is sitting at our cost, which was an accounting write-off. It's a reversal. And I'd like to go deeper into that. Basically, the TERS program, we are assisting clients that are in distress. The MOU, which is the memorandum that we have with the UIF, says that as we assist the clients, 65% will be funded by the UIF, and 35% of that the client needs to pay. Now, what we picked up over time is that the very same clients that you are assisting could not pay the 35% owed to Productivity SA. I think one obvious reason is that in any event, the client is in economic distress. So in our books, we will then raise this amount that you are expecting from these clients. Those amounts for the year or in total were 12 million. Over time, in accounting, we are expected to evaluate our financials for them to reflect fair values. So we tested this balance. Is this money achievable? Is it recoverable or not? When we went through that test, we had evidence that it is unlikely to recover the 12 million from the companies that are in distress. We then took the recommendation to the Audit and Risk Committee to say, in our view as management, we have sufficient evidence that monies may not be recovered. Can we look at a write-off to fairly present our financials? The Audit Committee recommended that we get a second opinion from external auditors. We followed that route, and they came back a month later, also recommending that we do an impairment provision. So when you do that, that cost becomes part of your income statement, hence the 12 million loss for the year. If you were to take that out, the company for the year did achieve a surplus position to the tune of 820,000 rand. For the year. But if you bring that in to present your financials in fair value terms, yes, we are we experience a loss situation of 11.9 million. I would like to take you to the next slide. The next slide basically talks to our governance and compliance. Now, we have 11 areas where we had audit findings. In total of them, there were 34 picked up by our auditors. Of the 34, we have been able to we implemented remedial action, and all of them have been sorted, have been covered. 34 of them. Part one, there is one number five that says contract management. There, the issue was we do not have a system that manages our contracts. At this stage, I can report that the system has been developed or is being developed. We are now at the testing stage. So basically, this particular audit finding should be covered going forward. In the main, most of them, 50% of these audit areas are around procurement. What we've done differently, we've put together procurement committees that never existed before. So we now have a bid committee. We now have an adjudicating committee. And all our procurement are now is now centralized. Previously, each program will do its own procurement. So now issues of compliance would be missed in that setup. So the new setup is now such that all procurement should be channeled through one point. So I can safely say our governance status has improved. It is improving. We have action plans that are, and we want to ensure that we maintain the status and even improve it going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Productivity SA. Members, I think members, first members, thank you so much for the presentation. I think I understand now. Honorable America, noted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it would be an understatement if I say I'm totally disgusted in terms of the hand that was dealt to Productivity South Africa. I mean, it's like you having to run a household where you have 100% of your income budgeted for, and at the end of the day you only get 50% of that budget, but you still have all the commitments and the expenses that occurred with running that household. And this is what happened here. And I think under extremely trying conditions, Mr. Matiba and his team had to achieve certain outcomes, which they will never achieve because they didn't have the money. And it is purely on the basis of the 25% transfers that occurred from the UIF, because they have set the task for themselves to transfer 80% of the funds by March 2017. And at that stage, they have only transferred 25%. And the reason provided, that's why they didn't achieve that target, and the reason that they provided was because of the investigation, so-called financial irregularities that were brought to their notice by Mr. Matiba and his team. So they were punished for cleaning up the perceived irregularities that may have occurred. And that is not right. It is not right, Mr. Marupen. Is that you punished Productivity South Africa, that could have saved jobs, that could have kept people in the positions who will pay UIF contributions. You've punished them for that. And that you should hang your head in shame, you and your team, that you've allowed this situation to continue for two quarters. This is absolutely unforgivable. Is that here we have an organization whose primary purpose is to save jobs, and yet, through our own deliberate actions, we prevent them from saving jobs. So, it is difficult for me to evaluate this presentation for what it is because of the circumstances that were created by outside forces other than the management of Productivity South Africa. I mean, it is difficult. I mean, you're supposed to have gotten 50% of your budget and you don't get it. On another lighter note, I think if we talk about the debt write-off, and I understand and I surely, have appreciation for so difficult because you're dealing with this. You know what is recoverable and not, what's not recoverable. And when the external auditors made a sort of recommendation, certainly that I had to go back to the internal audit committee, I had to go back to management to make a decision whether we could follow that route. Why did you follow that route? I mean, because of your experience that it's not going to be recoverable, the over 12 million rand, and an external auditor who made the recommendation to justify the fee, I tried to get them to pay off the amount, and you know you're not going to get it. And it reflects badly on your financial, given the other financial concerns you have. So lastly, Madam Chair, I am utterly sympathetic to your cause, that that circumstances conspired because of your sort of commitment to improve the management and operations of Product Services South Africa, that you're not able to achieve some of your targets. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable America, Honorable Van Skalkwyk. I'm covered, Chair. Thank you. Honorable Lollywood.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm looking at slide 38 where it shows irregular expenditure and also the fact that you depend more on grants. You are unable to sustain yourselves. When you, the legal that you were given, you did not save any jobs with it. One, what I want to check with you in terms of your priorities, what is your main priority as Productivity SA? So that when you are given as, funding as legal as you have, what is it that you prioritize? Also, in your SWOT analysis, what did you come up with? Where would you like to be assisted so that you get empowered? It cannot be that throughout your existence you'll depend on being given money by somebody else. There should be a stage where it may be 20% of money coming from outside, and say maybe 80% is what you generate yourselves. Can you just help me there?
Honorable Bahrain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are a little bit more generic and help us out on it. Obviously, when you set a target, you set it because you've had a look at the operation and you've had a look at what is achievable and what you should be achieving. In other words, you set the target a little bit further than what you could get. What you're saying I've got in the past, and you push yourself. That's the whole idea of targets. Otherwise, you don't need to set targets. We can just say, well, we did what we did last year and undo a target. Now, I've heard now on, I think I counted about 8 different occasions or different things, that you said your target was achieved in the first quarter, and so you're satisfied. But that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous for two reasons. One, you didn't set the target properly, obviously, because if you could achieve it in the first quarter, what's the issue here? And two, when you saw that you'd achieved it in the first quarter, why didn't you revisit your target? Obviously. Any business would do that. In other words, if we said, I'm going to sell 10 apples today, and at 9 o'clock in the morning you've now sold 10 apples, you should set your target a little bit more for the rest of the day. That's what you should be doing. So that's my first issue. The second issue, obviously, you needed to have, where you couldn't set targets, you needed to say, well, look, we're not getting the money, so we're not going to get the target, so we have to revisit the target. Obviously, again, it doesn't help coming to us saying, well, we didn't get the money, so we didn't get the target, so we're satisfied that we did the best we could. You should have reset it again. Otherwise, why come here and then start talking to us about a reset target? That being said, I'm very strong in believing that the operation is needed, definitely needed for our economy. We're going through mass retrenchments, and I believe one of the most strategic objectives that you can actually follow is trying to save jobs. And in fact, this very committee, and we reported this back to the department a few months back, this very committee went on an oversight visit, and we visited a factory where, in fact, productivity had come in and had saved a lot of jobs and looks like they're going to save many more in the future. So well done to you on that one, because just that one small example where we were sitting in a factory where they told us, they said this whole department has turned around because someone from Productivity South Africa, I can't remember whom, had come in and had helped them. And so clearly it's needed, and clearly I believe and I agree with my colleague Honorable Liliwe, not that I often do, but on this occasion I do, because you could be sustaining yourselves. Most companies, if they just use that one example that we saw, most companies you could use that as a selling point and they would come in and they would pay you. Now you know what, these turnaround experts in the private sector charge millions. You could probably charge your whole budget to two or three companies and you won't need anything from the UIF, and then we won't have disgusted my colleague who's sitting here shaking his head. And you probably could. So I agree with Honorable Liliwe on that one. It's probably very easy. All you need is a business person to come in and show how you can make the money, and especially seeing that you're endorsed by the Department of Labor. It's an easy selling point. I could sell it for you. So, to sum up with that, you should have reset your targets. You should have known that you weren't getting the money. You should have then properly set proper targets, which you didn't do. And so I don't have to go on each time where you said, oh, we were very happy we hit it in the first quarter. That doesn't make any sense. Then if you look at slide number 12, where you say 3,000 jobs or 3,880 jobs saved, I mean, that's really a drop in the ocean. I know for every single person, it's the starfish product. For every starfish you save, you've saved a universe. And so for these 3,080 people, you've saved those families. But you really could be stretching yourself a lot further than that at slide number 12. Just in terms of the number of media articles, and you tend to try and explain that away by saying you didn't have the funding from the UIF, but that's ridiculous. I mean, you're doing good work. You don't have to have funding for the media. You can send out press releases. You need one person to be able to send out press releases. You could make comments. You could do all sorts of things. You don't need much funding for that. So I'm not really sure what that excuse is, because it's certainly not a funding excuse. I mean, to employ one person to do the press releases and to gain... People are working every day, I hope, and people are doing good things every day, I hope, and the press are desperate for articles. You heard that from Madam Chair, that the Sunday Times like to print things. If you just send them, you send them information, they'll print, so you don't need funding for that. So I don't know where that comes from. And again, it's at slide number 18 on page 9. The number of media articles published, you're down by 40. Again, you said it was because you had difficulty in securing media space due to lack of funding. You don't need to pay. You just need to speak. And because you're doing good work, you need to speak and say something. You can't just sit back and say, oh, we don't have funding to buy it, so we're not going to do anything. That doesn't make sense. Can you imagine everyone else doing that? You're the one that set these targets, and you put on page 10, slide number 20, the number of emerging entrepreneurs trained. You set a target of 5,500, the annual target. I mean, that's tiny. That's absolutely small, even for a department with very little money. I mean, the SMMEs are desperate for training, absolutely desperate. People would even pay you to come for this, but I mean, for a whole year, the entire department is only going to do 5,500. Doesn't make any sense to me. And the number of workers trained is only 1,000. You could do that in one or two sittings, 2 days. It also doesn't make any sense at all. It really doesn't. That's slide number 20. And the workers are looking for training. People are desperate to come, and it doesn't cost money to do that. Again, on page 11, slide number 22, there's a whole lot. The whole lot is variance. And you keep blaming it on the lack of money. It really doesn't make any sense at all to me. And then again at page 14, slide number 28, number of enterprises in aftercare. That's ridiculous. A target achieved in quarter one. So by quarter two, then you thought, okay, we don't have to do any work over here. And so you again got the variance going downhill. It means that people actually took their foot off the accelerator because you've already achieved it. That's what it really means. Exactly the same as repeated slide number 50. Exactly the same. Thank you. I'm not going to... Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bertram. Productivity, I say? Question?
Chairperson, if you will allow me just to respond to Honorable...
Certain questions, okay.
Yeah, to certain questions. Honorable America, your concern. Indeed, that is also a concern to us. Because we are also of the view that, yes, the wrongdoings happened, but we can't, they must work. They must put the people of the country to work, and they must save jobs. So we have put measures in place as the department to ensure that this is not repeated again. There's a steering committee which I chair, in which we have regular meetings to see that progress is happening in terms of the Turnaround Solutions program, and that funding takes place the way it should take place. Because we do not want a repeat of what has happened last year. So we share your discomfort in this matter. I hope to, when we come and present to the committee again, to show a different picture in terms of our commitment to make sure that the funding takes place and that the that productivity South Africa is enabled to deliver on their mandate. The matter of the targets, if I can just respond from if I can put on my cap as COO, because this is my responsibility, I think we'll assist Productivity South Africa with exactly this concern that you are raising in how to address it going forward, the achievement of a year's target in quarter one, and how it should be corrected and so forth. So in the next, or after quarter one, quarter two, we'll see that they indeed report against quarterly targets and not report and say we have achieved it already in quarter one, but that there is this consistent performance in terms of quarterly targets. We'll do that going forward. Madam Chair, and then I think the rest of the questions I'll allow the CEO of Productivity South Africa to respond to. Thank you.
Thank you. That response or that information is assisting. However, I would want to, just before they start answering questions, to hear from the Productivity SA, from your response, are you aware that the department has put measures in place to deal with your problems? As Productivity SA.
Yes, Chair, we are aware. I'm actually part of the solution.
You know why I'm asking that question? Because looking at your budgeting as productive, your targeting, when you are doing your targets, I fail to understand. I'm not going to ask you that question to answer it because I think it has been questioned in various ways. Why I want to understand whether you are aware is because I fail to understand the way you are setting up your targets, because it has been a problem for you when it comes to this fund. It's either this fund is late, or it's either the fund it does not come as you are expecting. So definitely when you are setting up your target, it's like productivity, say, sits in that corner and just do targets. And then when it comes to UIF, UIF has their own problems. I don't have problems. And then so it has been going on. But now that you are saying you are part of it, and it is for the last time that we hear irregularities relating to the targets that are not achieved because of the monies that were not received, then it will be much better, because you can't target when you are not sure that you are going to get the money. And you can't target, I mean, it means all the parties that have to contribute towards your targets. At least when you target, you are sure that you'll be able to meet that target. Your problem will be something else, but it will not be financial constraints. And as you were speaking, you know, you were speaking so very, your English was high flowing, and to someone who does not understand the problems that are in productivity essay, would think that all is well. Because when you say you've achieved our targets, you know, in quarter one we've achieved quarter two, quarter three. So it does not bother us, because those targets have been achieved. And as you're speaking, I sit there and listening and ask myself, how could have this happened? Be that as it may, I don't want you to answer or comment, because as I'm saying, the response from the acting DG is assisting us. It means that when you come back, it's going to be a complete different picture. We do know that you are dependent, but then you must target according to what you can get, not more, not under. Thank you. So you can answer the questions from the members.
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide 38 about irregular expenditure, it is a fact that in the 15-16 financial year, we had irregular expenditure. And that's why in the 16-17 financial year, we put measures in place to correct that. Let me just put it up front. This is before I joined the entity. And we then knew there is this problem, that we put in place measures to ensure that it doesn't happen again. So we are managing this area. It is a fact that surely if you have this little funding that you get and somewhere else you misuse it, it defeats the purpose. On the question of main priorities and sustainability of the entity, our main priorities are two. One is to target those companies in the productive sectors of the economy so that we help them to improve their performance. And that's why we're working with the DTI. That's why we're talking about the 8.9 million funding. So that's the key business area for Productivity SA. The second is on the turnaround solutions program. But just to indicate that we are not into sitting on the problems that happened in the past. In the 16-17 financial year, we had these challenges. But then we went to the DG and said, it cannot continue, because there's a funding agreement, it should be honored. So that when we set our targets, it is informed by that funding agreement, and then funds should come through. So the challenges happened in 2016, 17. Going forward, there has been an agreement with the DG on the 31st of March that the investigation should be finalized. Secondly, we should put in place governance structures, which we have done. Thirdly, we should revise the funding agreement, which we have done. And the expectation is in this current financial year, money should flow to Productivity SA based on our performance. So that's where we were saying, I think in the 17-18 financial year, we planned informed by that. The reality is, yes, when you talk about targeting, it's about stretch. I agree with you, committee member. And we learn from lessons. When we did a review of our planning processes, this was an issue, and we corrected it in the 2017-18 financial year. We appreciate the input on the media articles that it's not an issue of funding. We were planning on buying media space depending on funding, but it did not work out. But we will go and do things differently. On the issue of training of SMMEs as well as workers, again there, if you don't have funds, you can't do it. That's the reality of the situation we're facing, because there is goods and services in terms of travel and accommodation in that regard. But we looked at all these targets and began to ask ourselves, in line with that core business that we spoke about, what is it that we can do with the funds that we have so that we help emerging enterprises, we help companies in distress, and also to ensure that those that are having to compete better, we assist them. So, Chairperson, I'm confident when we come back with the 17-18 reporting, we will begin to see an improvement, because we are also beginning to manage performance better. Thank you.
Any more questions? None. In the absence of none, thank you very much, Productivity SA. Now we will be doing NEDLAC.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. The first to the fifth slides are just giving the overview of what NEDLAC is about. I will just zoom into slide six, which deals with quarter three performance overview. We have in NEDLAC, I'm sure as we all know, three programs: administration, core operations, and constituency capacity building funds. We achieved 100% in the two programs, cooperations and constituency capacity building funds. The only place where we didn't achieve the 100% was administration, and that was primarily because of our failure to meet one of the targets, actually two of the targets, which is relating to off-site backup data storage. That was one of the findings in the previous financial year, that we should have that, and we did source some assistance from CETA on that, and it was just too expensive for NEDLAC because the cost was around 650,000 rand. We ended up getting permission from National Treasury to source out this assistance from an outside service provider, and we got that at the beginning of the last quarter of this financial of the financial year that we are reporting on, and it cost us about 120,000 rand, which was quite a saving. So that's the reason why we didn't do that, and we didn't achieve our target there. And overall, we achieved 89% performance. And in terms of slide 7, in terms of Section 77 applications, we had two that were carried over from the previous financial year, and the matters that we still had those going forward. That means we had two that we carried forward to the next quarter. Slide eight. It's quarter four performance overview. Again, there we were short, especially on the second program, core operations. We achieved 70% of the target. There were eight indicators or targets that were not achieved, and the main reason in relation to that was around the signing of the reports, and also the bills that were not processed on time. The work of NEDLAC obviously involves the stakeholders, because we have a time limit on these things, for example 6 months on finalization of bills at the level of NEDLAC, and that unfortunately was not achieved in three of the bills that were presented, which is the critical infrastructure protection bill, occupational health and safety bill, and also the briefing report that was supposed to be prepared after the session with the Commission for Employment Equity. So those were the areas, but we are happy that that was achieved later on immediately after the end of this quarter. So the summary performance of this quarter was 79%. And on slide 9, the Section 77 applications, we achieved two, we concluded two of these Section 77 applications, and none were outstanding at the end of this quarter. I think we will end there, Chair, because we were advised that perhaps we shouldn't be dealing with all the other issues, just deal with those areas where we did not meet the targets. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, NEDLAC. Just to refresh my memory on the savings that you have made. Have you made some savings? Did you talk about savings? Did I hear you talking about savings? Where have you made savings?
Savings?
Yeah, I didn't hear you correctly.
No, I didn't talk about savings.
You did not talk about savings?
No.
Okay. My apologies. Members, Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to welcome the presentation that has been made by NEDLAC. But when looking at quarter four, program two, when you indicate your targets, you say that you've achieved 70% of your targets. But when I look on page 18 in terms of the expenditure information, in program 2, your expenditure was 110%, yet you didn't reach 30% of your targets. Can we get an explanation why the underachievement versus the overspending in that area? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Bikram, your hand was up. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as an aside, and maybe you can help us with it, when we last spoke to you as this committee, You had assured us that we were going to get copies of the agreements that you had reached with the various parties, or the Director General had offered it to us, with regard to strike ballots, etc. We never got it over here. We had no report back, and I'm sure Zolani never got it either, and maybe you could just look into that and see what actually happened. Just as an overview, I want to go, you've spent 31 million rand over this period of time. I want your honest input. Do you think you've spent it wisely? We don't see all that much. Yes, there's been a lot of talking and there have been some agreements, but you've spent 31 million rand, and compared to that figure and what sort of productivity has been able to do, let us know whether you think there's value for money, bang for the buck. I have very strong doubts as to whether that happened. As we saw 2-3 years back, agreements were reached at NEDLAC and then were promptly overturned by Parliament later. So it's a lot of money to spend on talk shops. So I'm not sure where we actually going. And I look at your strategic objectives, and yes, a lot of the strategic objectives relate to your internal processes, but I'm not sure where you're helping the public and job creation, and what you're actually doing for the situation that South Africa finds itself in today. Probably one of the best that we can look at is somehow creating the social dialogue which might create peace in the marketplace. That's probably the most that you could, the highlight of what you could say that this department's doing, but I'd like to know what your feeling is on that particular thing. In terms of setting the targets, for instance, slide number 6, capacity building funds, constituency capacity building funds, you've set the target as 3, and you say you've reached 100%, but isn't that target pretty low by any stretch of the imagination? To keep telling us that you hit 100% of it doesn't mean that you're doing good work. It means that you might have set your target too low, and I have a strong feeling that that's what's actually happened here, that the target was set too low. We are expecting you, and again, I'm repeating what I said with productivity, we are expecting you to stretch your legs a little bit and not to just set a target that you think is achievable and let's go for it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, NEDLAC.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to explain the variance between what was achieved on program 2 and the expenditure on program 2. Indeed, we achieved 70% of the target in quarter 4, but we spent about 110% of the budget. The main reason for that is the work of the national minimum wage process that we have undertaken, which was not budgeted for right at the beginning of the financial year. So no one anticipated the amount of work that would be undertaken processing the NEDLAC within the NEDLAC process, the national minimum wage work. So that is the main reason why we're sitting with that over expenditure there. And the next question was around, from Mr. Vakhrein, around the 31 million rand, whether this is the money well spent. Well, from where I'm sitting, I would say yes, it's the money well spent, because if we were paying for everything that we are doing as NEDLAC, would be paying much more than that. We are lucky that some of the constituencies actually fund their own people that are participating in NEDLAC process. As we all understand, these are primarily tripartite processes within NEDLAC. So everything that we do, even the reports or discussions of bills or policies, they are done in a tripartite structure. And the outcome, obviously, is that we must sign off on these reports. We must sign off on the consultations that are happening. And that is being done, and we are meeting the targets as we have set them. But I understand that we could do better than that. And with regards to helping in job creation, that, unfortunately, we discuss at NEDLAC ways in which we can ameliorate the impact of job losses. For example, we work very closely with other institutes or other entities of the Department of Labor, for example, UIF and the CCMA, to ensure that we contribute somehow. But our role is primarily around developing policies, and then the implementation is somewhere else. We do not necessarily implement as an entity any job creation initiatives. And the issue of Program 3, that the target is low, we must understand that Program 3 is about capacity building of the social partners. We have three social partners that are funded by NEDLAC. It's business, labor, and community. So they meet all their targets that they've set. For example, in labor, they have what they call the labor school. In January this year, they attended that labor school, and they spent about 450,000, but they managed to save in their program, but they achieved all the targets that they've set for themselves. It's primarily the activities that are undertaken by the social partners. Ours is to support those activities or those initiatives of the social partners. Thank you, Chair.
You wanted to say something, Mr. Seafield.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I heard Mr. Honourable Bafram's question in relationship to the relevance of NEDLAC in the current debate, and rather than whether we are doing and punting of the production that we put into to NEDLAC. And I wanted to ensure Honourable Bafram that NEDLAC remains relevant in the context of social dialogue, relevant in the context of developing consensus around labour policy, but as well economic policy. You would recall that the outcome of NEDLAC in one instance, as you rightfully point out, is the agreement and agreement on a national minimum wage and labour stability in the context. But it also contributed to the realisation of the benefits derived from the UIF amendments, the Occupational Health and Safety Bill, the COIDA Amendment Bill, etc. So it contributes to a very large extent to economic policy within the country, and the relevance of NEDLAC in the context of the current debate and the challenges in the country remains relevant. I think that's the question that you're asking, and I thought let me respond to that. Thank you, Chair.
Just one question, NEDLAC. Okay, maybe two. One, how much in total have you used to use from your budget that made an overspending to your actual budget in total? Yes.
In total, ma'am,
spending, which resulted you to end up having overspent on certain programs?
I would check now. I think it's around 1.6 million rand, Chairperson, which is primarily attributable to the work of the national minimum wage and the that's primarily the work that we've undertaken in the national minimum wage, and in total, it's for the whole financial year. Actually, it's about 1.6 million rand.
What I don't understand is where you overspend or underspend as a result of national minimum wage. I'm asking this question because the president made a pronouncement in 2014-15 financial year. So if you are saying to us in 2014, maybe 15-16, you had to overspend because it's something that you were not expecting, something that you did not budget for. But for 16-17, you should be in line with the budget for the national minimum wage.
Yes. Can I just explain that, Chairperson, the issue of the national minimum wage, when we submitted the budget that was submitted for 2016-2017, the process was still at the beginning, right at the beginning. So no one could anticipate how long was it going to happen. And as a result, when we continued up until February this year, it was not in the budget of NEDLAC that was approved for 2016-2017. And when that happened early this year, we never understood that we were going to have the many task teams that were eventually created. And primarily it's around meetings, traveling and accommodation for people, because we had more meetings. If you have the committee of principals sitting, we will have them almost on a monthly basis, and you have about 50 people coming from all over the country to participate in that, and that was something that was not planned for. But we are in the process of correcting that. We are in discussion with the department because now we know the extent of involvement and expenditure that is anticipated for this work from now, and we have a deadline. We have a pin on the ground. We understand exactly that by the 1st of May next year, we should have concluded all the work that relates to the national minimum wage.
Thank you. We have concluded. Oh, your hand up, I didn't say sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rising out of the answer which I got, which is what the answer was I was looking for, and thank you, sir, about the relevance and the expenditure of the $31 million. I understand and I agree that there is relevance to the fact that we have agreement on policy with the social partners. What I was getting at is you have agreement and it is a talk shop and you do get somewhere and it does help the country. But does it warrant the expenditure of 31 million rand in that financial year? So you have 30 million spent on talking. That's really what's happened. And we know that that talking, in reality, doesn't mean that it'll lead into legislation. And I'm not so sure you need to spend when you get people put together. Every day people get together and talk all sorts of policies. It doesn't mean there has to be expenditure. And I'm quite sure that if you got the trade union movement to sit with government, to sit with big business, and you ask them to sit, you wouldn't have to spend any money on it. And I know that we've now got a tradition of spending money on it. I'm just questioning the relevance. So thank you for that.
I think the question has been answered because Honorable Bekram, I don't know what this 31 million have been used for, but if you are going to talk about traveling, people had to do traveling, had to visit countries and talk. The talk was not only talk here in South Africa. The research has been, the number of things that have been done, and we have not asked NEDLAC to come and present that. And in any case, we're not going to ask NEDLAC to come and present the details of what that money has been spent. We don't have that time. We have our own core, you know, business things to do on a daily basis. But I think the gist of what the money has done is there. the problem would just to be, say, sitting and talking around, and then because it's just like any informal gathering, you know, it's a formal gathering like you here. When you sit here, you eat, you spend money. If you can ask how much Parliament spends just for that tea that you have here and those things, and then compare with what Netlip does, calling countries, going to countries, really, we can't, I don't want to discuss that. Can we then think there are no further questions? And thank you so much, Acting DG, and all the entities that presented today. We've noted and applaud you for the progress, and we also noted that you are dealing with the challenges that you have encountered, or in the process, or you are encountering them. That is a good thing to hear, and thank you so much. For you, you can live, but quietly, because we are proceeding. Thank you. There is lunch. Is it outside? There's finger lunch outside, actually. Maybe you can just, because it will be a fruitless expenditure department. So you can leave your books and go and eat. Don't worry. Or you can take your books, anything that you want to do, but don't leave that food there. Okay. Thank you. Members, we have one set of minutes of the 31st of May 2017, and this set of minutes have been with the members for more than a week. Do you have copies? Have you seen it? Honorable Bekram? Oh, Honorable Bekram is proposing adoption. Honorable Loliwo?
I second.
Okay. Then the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Labour has been adjourned.